For too long, the fertility market has been bewildering, overwhelming, and frankly, I think has downright ignored the needs and difficult experiences of the people they're supposed to be serving. Ovum has made it their mission to change this completely. Now, I am extremely choosy about who I promote on this podcast because I'm very protective of my listeners and audience, which is why you've probably only ever heard one spoken ad like this before. So it's with complete confidence, excitement, and pride that I can share this amazing company with you. Ovum care about you, truly. From creating products to support conception and fertility that are designed by doctors and backed by the latest science without cutting any corners, from adding access to meditations I've personally written and recorded inside their pregnancy test boxes, Ovum is founded by individuals who've navigated infertility themselves. I really couldn't be more proud to partner with them and tell you about them. Ovum is driven by the belief that everyone who is trying to conceive deserves better, and I am 100% behind this ethos. So head over to startwithovum.com and use code LIFERAFT10 for 10% off their tests and supplements. Hello and welcome back to the TTC Life Raft. It's episode 8, and this is the podcast empowering you through infertility or loss. My name is Alice Rose, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you with me. And today I've got the fabulous Dr. Larissa Corder, who is a women's health specialist, and she's always on your telly box, Lorraine, this morning, sharing her vast knowledge about all things fertility related, IVF related, but also 360 holistic approach to health, fertility, life in general. So I won't do a big introduction because there's a lovely, long and juicy chat that you can get your teeth into just coming up right now. So enjoy, and I'll see you on the other end.
So here we are, we're in Larissa's lovely cozy flat.
Yeah, we are. It's really nice to have you here, actually. Thank you for coming.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
A delicious butternut squash lasagna.
We carried on the butternut squash theme because that's what I had at your house before.
Yeah. Well, so that seems to be our thing.
It is our thing, so I thought I'd reciprocate.
So, Larissa and I have recently become friends.
Yes.
Having met at an event and discovered that we live in the same postcode in London.
That's insane, isn't it? Literally down the road.
Oh, it's just amazing. It's not only a friend who is as into fertility stuff as I am. I'm just like totally fascinated when you start launching into a chat about doing an egg collection or an embryo transfer. And to me, obviously, having been the one that's just gone through that, and you're coming from completely the other side, I just think it's just so fascinating to kind of chat to you and like talk to me about what it's like for you on that side to go into that room.
I don't think you ever lose sense of the fact that it's an enormous privilege to do what I do, and that it's this incredible field that, I mean, really, we're dealing with things which are the beginning of life, and what could be more fascinating than that? So it is super cool. It is super interesting. I can't even imagine any other area comparing to that. But, you know, the thing is that you also try and make it fun for people, because it's a stressful experience, and people go into it not understanding what to expect, not understanding necessarily what they're getting into. I mean, I think most people are aware it will be stressful, but nothing can really truly prepare you for that. And I think the one opportunity you have as a doctor or as a nurse or anyone within that sort of profession is that you have this real opportunity to have this impact and to turn that experience into something really positive for that patient. So I think for me, you know, we were laughing about this earlier, but I embarrassingly admitted to Alice that I actually sing while I'm in theatre.
So, quality soundtrack as well. Do you want to share what your favourite?
Nothing but the best, Alice. So I have a slight obsession with S Club 7, which I think anyone who knows me knows. I mean, literally, this is all over the shop. I think anytime we've had any events, we've had any major gatherings, I will literally get up and sing S Club 7. And you know, the thing is, I know all of the words to all of their songs. I have dance moves. I've actually taught my entire nursing staff how to do the dance moves to this. So whenever I am in theatre, I mean, surgeons generally have funny little fads and stuff that they do. And my particular one is I like a bit of S Club 7 in while I'm in theatre.
And I think, you know, as much as that sounds really silly, and obviously we're having a laugh about it, but it is actually so important to put that patient at ease and to make it into a positive experience, because they've probably, you know, who knows what journey they've been up to up to that point, and you have no idea like what they've been through to get to that point. So actually, I love that you sing us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for appreciating my talents, my hidden talents. I do. On a serious note, I really do feel that actually it's a small part of what we do, and it feels like a small contribution. But actually in itself, the number of times that people and patients have come back and said how much that's meant to them and that their whole experience was made so much better because of the attitudes that they had from the staff and the nurturing atmosphere and the fact that they were made to feel really, really cared and looked after. I think, you know, that vibe translates into your care, even into doing all of the practical stuff around it. And, you know, I very much believe in terms of all that I do, not within just my medical practice but just generally life, into really nurturing a mindset that's all about wanting to give the best of yourself to someone and to invest something positive into something. I think I also always realize and never take for granted is the stories that people tell you and the stories that they come to you with are things that they may never ever have shared with anyone else, and that's an incredible responsibility, an enormous privilege. But what's also nice is you can also really have a laugh about some stuff, you know? So, you know, there's nothing... I mean, how many times does anyone else ask people how often they have sex or what positions they use? I'm not sure that anyone really does other than this job and perhaps a few others. And it's so strange how every time, you know, you do ask that question about how often people have sex, the answer from the woman is so different compared to the man. And that in itself is just so telling. And, you know, there's all sorts of funny stories as well that people will recount to you. And I think it just softens the mood, softens the atmosphere, and suddenly makes them realise that, you know, they're very human and we're all very human and vulnerable. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. This is the great part of being a medic, that, you know, you could be the president of the United States or you could be, you know, Joe Bloggs from down the street, but yet you're all suffering from the same condition, you know, the same issues, the same problems, and you treat everyone the same. And that's what's so wonderful about it. It really makes you appreciate and value people for who they are rather than anything else. The first time I did obs and gyne, obstetrics gynecology, so women's health, I was really, really fascinated by it. And I think growing up, and having come from former Yugoslavia, where obviously a big war took place, and women in particular went through a horrific time in terms of how they were treated. And most of us will recall images on TV in terms of so much that went on, including rape camps and including atrocities that were committed. And that really only now people are speaking about, because they, you know, it's something that, you know, to this day a lot of people can't discuss. But yet growing up as a child and seeing the effects that was leaving behind on people, and especially how women were suffering, I think had a very, very big impact on me. And in addition to that, I was raised by incredibly strong, amazing women. And so that really inspired me, I guess, to really value and respect women and to want to commit to them. So when I was 16, I read a book by Dr. Christian Northrup, who is quite a famous doctor over in the States. And this book completely transformed how I really viewed things, because she was talking about something that was so new age at that time. She was talking about so many spiritual elements to being a woman and how she had personally cured disease through using these elements, through using psychotherapy, through using things that weren't necessarily drugs and the conventional Western medicine that we were taught. And that absolutely blew my mind, and it fascinated me. And it made me realize how what sort of person I was, and, you know, that spiritual element to me as well as a person. And, you know, learning about all of that was absolutely fascinating to me. So when I actually became a medical student and started studying, it was just an area I was particularly drawn to. Now, remember, you know, this is going back quite some time ago. Now, a lot of this practice, holistic practice, as we call it, has become quite commonplace and it's gaining real momentum. But back then, you know, she was really sort of frowned down upon by so many men in particular, and people who considered themselves professors in the field and were questioning, you know, theories such as this. And it was very, very hard to stand up for that and to actually make a case for the fact that holistic healthcare was important and is important, especially in women's health. So I really, really admire and still to this day very much respect and follow her for what she did. So when I did my first stint in obstetrics and gynecology, I just loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I think I knew I loved it when I would be coming back home every night at, you know, close to midnight, all my friends would be out, and I would come home and I would want to do it all over again. And I'd switch on Grey's Anatomy and I'd watch that, and then I'd go back into work and I'd do more. And I just kept raving about what I'd seen and how cool it was. And I think I knew then that there was something amazing going on here that I was seeing and that was really, really influencing me. And then I got asked to write a chapter for a book by a registrar of mine, and we named it Biopanic. And it was all about this concept of older age motherhood. So again, this came back several years ago, before a lot of, I guess, IVF had taken off so much. And it was all about, you know, my job, my duty was to go and research that and understand what it was that was, you know, driving women to be older age mums and what was making them deferred childbearing. And one of the things that I had to do was I had to go and interview a patient who had really had so many complications in order to have her child, and not just to become pregnant, but in order to give birth. And she spent the majority of her pregnancy in hospital, having all sorts of different health issues and problems. And she eventually gave birth to a beautiful baby boy and all was well. And I remember going to interview her, and I remember asking her the question, if you knew all of this back then, would you still do this? Would you put your life at risk to have your child? Because essentially that is exactly what she did. I mean, she almost died. I'll never forget that. She looked me in the eye and she said, yes, 100% yes, I would do it all over again. And I just remember that struck a real chord with me. And there was something so empowering and so strong about how she just looked at me and said that. And I wrote an essay about this later in it, and it's included in the chapter. There's something so powerful about that innate desire to want to have a child. And I'm not saying it necessarily exists in everyone, but I think in the majority of women. And because when you ask most people what the meaning of life is and what they want to do and achieve, the majority of people will say to procreate, you know, to leave behind a legacy of something. And I just, again, to this day, find that incredibly fascinating. What is it that drives us to do that as human beings? So that was really the catalyst, all of these different series of events in terms of why I really sort of wanted to go into women's healthcare in particular, that started off with my childhood. But, you know, in particular, this sequence of events with writing that chapter, doing this research, interviewing that woman who came across my path, I think it just really, really made me realize that there's something so powerful about this and the fact that women really, really want this. And I guess I saw the future really being about older age motherhood in particular, because things are only getting harder and harder for women, you know, in terms of balancing and having it all, this concept that we have to have it all. And thank goodness we've had recent role models come out and say, actually, it is practically impossible to have it all. But yet we're still, there's still this enormous pressure for us to be able to appease that in a way, and to step up to that. And in some ways makes our situation quite impossible, you know, to literally have the career, have the partner, have the marriage, have the child, have the house, all at this particular designated time. And things are changing, you know, socially everything is changing for women, but yet biologically nothing much has.
That is, yeah, completely fascinating point, because you're absolutely spot on that I think a lot of women and men, obviously, who are dealing with this are stuck in this cycle of overwhelm as well, because you're just going, how is this possible? And the thing is, if it does work out and you do have your children and you've got the job and you've got the marriage and all that kind of really traditional, conventional life that we're kind of programmed to say that we're supposed to go and have, that's hard enough. But then what happens when things don't go to plan? What happens if you get to whatever age and you don't have a partner, or you are with a partner but you can't get pregnant, or you keep miscarrying, and suddenly you're supposed to juggle all of that still with the career? And
I know, it's impossible. It's so, so hard. And how much of life does ever go according to plan for the majority of us?
Exactly.
Really?
So then what do we do? Like, how do we cope with this? This is what I'm really interested in. I'm really fascinated with finding, although, yes, there are so many pressures on us, I believe that there are ways out of that feeling, and that there are ways to connect to a calmer and more positive energy. So we were talking earlier about your job. So you have a really high pressure, fascinating job. Obviously, we've just spoken about it then as well. But the ins and outs of your shift work. And what do you do to balance that? What's your route out of that pressure of modern life?
Yeah, I think I completely agree that actually it's so important to have something to come back to have some sort of escape, something that helps you stay centered and balanced and not go insane in amongst all of that, whether it's facing a high pressure job, whether it's facing subfertility, whether it's, facing any adversities in life. And I think that there are so many different features to this, and, we'll go on to those in a second, but I think the probably the most important one, and this is the advice I also give to my patients, is to appreciate the present moment and to appreciate where you're at this particular moment in time. Because I think so much of the time we're looking towards something that we don't have, that's missing in our lives, and presuming that the minute we have that, things will suddenly get better and suddenly we'll be happy and this huge transformation will take place and all our woes and troubles will forever be gone. But the reality really is that that's hardly ever the case. And, even if you take, subfertility, I was at an exhibition, we were discussing The Body Works, which, by the way, everyone should go and see. It is absolutely incredible and fascinating. But they were showing the results of a research study that had been done to measure happiness levels in people before they had children and after they had children. And guess where the happiness levels were actually greater?
Before.
Exactly right. And I was almost baffled by looking at this, but that's exactly it. And the reason we postulate that is because, when you're in that situation, not being able to have a child, of course, you're constantly looking at what you're missing and what you're not having. I think that what people sometimes forget to do, and all of us forget to do, is appreciate what we have in the present moment and where we're at and what the freedoms that we have and what we can enjoy and what we get to have in life. And I always, I mean, this is something I apply to my own life, but I always also say to my patients to appreciate all of the wonderful stuff that is actually going on for them and that actually they may have lost track of, really, and taken for granted to some extent, not intentionally, but because the main focus has been on what they don't have. And I think the minute you stop and appreciate that is the minute that your mindset actually starts to transform and you start to view your situation differently. And I think that is so, so important, because for every hurdle, for every adversity that you face, for every crappy upset or shift that you have or whatever it might be, I think you've got to put yourself in that situation where you, and this takes enormous courage actually as well and effort, to sort of reflect on it in a different way and to go and appreciate, well, I am doing my best. I am where I am. I've done what I could, and now I have to leave the rest, and I have to almost surrender some of that control, you know, whether it's a greater presence, greater power, whether it's the professionals, whether it's the clinic, whatever it might be, and almost remove that stress factor out of it and need to want to control it, because it is impossible to do that.
I think, you know, you use a really good word there, which is surrender.
Mm.
And I definitely remember feeling like I was trying to control everything. Mm. And it got so overwhelming and so stressful. Mm. Because I was literally trying to control my diet. I was trying to control the NHS.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just very normal.
You know, all of that. And actually, the minute that I did work out a way to surrender and to let go of that control was absolutely transformative.
Yeah, I'm so glad you say that, because there is so much power in that, to view your situation differently. And you know, people say that a miracle is a change in perception. It is a change in how you see that situation. And it could be something you've been seeing 1,000 times over. But actually, it will keep recurring that way unless you actually take that step back and look at it differently. I also always say to my patients that for a lot of people, they may not necessarily get to see any of the cool stuff behind this. You know, one of the great things about going through this treatment is actually you get to have the scans and you get to see how your body responds to hormones and what it's capable of producing and how amazing it is, you know, in essence.
Totally. And I actually remember saying that when we went through everything, and we're probably going to be going through it again. But yeah, I actually remember going, I actually love this part of it. I mean, okay, perhaps love.
Too strong a word.
Perhaps love is a strong word. But I was able to see a benefit.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know whether this is going to be controversial and people are going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I would, you know, give anything not to have to go through this. And as much as I obviously, I would love to have been able to conceive naturally as well. Yes. But I also thought, well, yeah, but I can't. So this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I'm going to try and look at what is good about it. And you're so right. Like, that was, to me, completely fascinating. Mm. You know, I mean, yes, it gets a bit much when you're going in and again and again and again after so many failed cycles.
Of course, that's hard.
But there is this incredible thing that you don't, you know, and with our IVF cycle that did work, I felt so emotional that I'd been able to see my daughter, who is now nearly 2, as an embryo. And I treasure that photo. Yeah. And I think I'm so lucky.
Oh,
it's so special that I've got that.
It is. It's absolutely incredible. And you know, just the very act of forming her embryo and how that came to be is absolutely fascinating and just beautiful. And I'm really pleased you're saying that, because yes, I think that, you know, the whole situation is incredibly tough, and you know what I'm saying in no way detracts from that. But what I guess I'm trying to say is that there are ways of dealing with a situation that may be helpful, and that is to try and view it slightly differently. So instead of focusing on the shortcomings of the situation and the inadequacies and all of the bad stuff that's going on with it, trying to stay focused on the positive. And a lot of patients actually even feedback to me and talk to me, and I think you'd mentioned as well the power of visualization, of seeing something as an end goal and being determined enough to get there, being positive enough to get there. And I don't mean positive, by the way, in a phony way.
Totally.
I don't mean that in that, because there's
absolutely
a big difference.
Important to recognize that.
Between sort of, you know, pretending it's all okay and putting on a brave face, because we've all had to do that. And it doesn't feel very real. I mean, that you don't get that same gut reaction, do you? It feels like a forced smile. But what I'm talking about is where you transform the power of your mind to such an extent that actually it you know, that positivity starts to emanate from you, that no matter what happens, you know you will be okay.
100%.
That's the
thing. You know, you take the words out of my mouth, because these are words that I try to say to, you know, and if I could go back to my younger self, just as we were going into all of this, that is what I would say. You're going to have a difficult time, but you are going to be okay.
You're going to be okay in the end, because you will become incredibly strong during the whole process, and there will be so many people behind you and loving and supporting you. And that ultimately you will have built something so big and deep and powerful within yourself that you will be okay. Whatever that outcome is, whatever your avenue to motherhood is, you will be okay. And there's power in knowing that and understanding that and truly believing it, that you will be okay.
Totally. I just love that. And that's very much something that I try to get people to cultivate within themselves, and like building that power. And you're so right by also acknowledging, understanding that that power is there as well.
It's deep within you. And I think as women in particular, we are so much more powerful than we think. We are so much more stronger than we think. And it's only sometimes when we face these really difficult situations that we realize actually how strong we are. And I think there's real beauty in that. It again is one of the things that really fascinates me, and it's the thing that always brings a smile to my face when I see how incredible the men and women are when facing this. It's amazing. I guess the second tip that I would give in terms of how to manage stress, which is opening up to people and dealing with stress and adversity by talking to, whether it's your friends, whether it's your relatives, whether it's a counsellor, but someone who's there going through this journey with you. Because I think there's nothing worse than having to face something alone and feeling completely alone and isolated. And it's very easy to do that when you're facing subfertility and when you're facing all of these challenges. Mm. And there are many. No matter who it is that's on this path with you, obviously someone that you trust, it's just so important to talk and to wail and to express anger and to cry and to laugh, all of these things, all of these emotions, to not feel ashamed of them and to have someone validate them for you and go, you know what, actually it's perfectly normal that you're acting like this. And we were saying earlier, you know, we're big talkers, you know, one of the big ways we deal with things in our lives is we talk and we open up to people. And goodness knows I've definitely done that. And I don't know, you know, the only way sometimes to keep on the straight and narrow is to talk to someone. So, you know, I would definitely encourage people to spend time in good company and with people who will bring positivity into their lives.
Mm.
You know, don't be dragged down, because there are also, I'm sad to say it, but there are also people who will drag you down and who will have a negative attitude, who will judge you and what you're doing and where you're at in life. And actually that judgment isn't for anyone to make. You don't abide by anyone's laws or rules, because actually guess what, there are no rules, there are no laws. Who says you have to do something in life at this particular point or have something in life at a certain point in time? I mean, there is no rule. People have made that up.
It doesn't exist.
It is a lie. It's all a big fallacy. It's all a big lie.
Totally.
There are no rules apart from the ones that you make up. And
that, I think realizing that is so freeing and so refreshing to feel like, oh, I can just do this what I want to do.
I mean, the thing is, I've never lived my life by these rules. And I think, you know, if you're the sort of person that I am, if someone tells you you can't do something, you want to do it even more, don't you? So I think, you know, just not being restricted by those fears that are actually, you know, they're fallacies. They don't exist. Mm. They're not actually real. And, you know, understanding that you're on your own personal journey and your own personal path, and that there will be people there who will support you just as much as there may be people who also drag you down, but also recognizing that, excluding all of the negative stuff and focusing on the people who bring you joy and love and who, you know, you can be yourself with. You can be completely unashamed to be totally vulnerable in front of and who will love you and respect you for who you are. It's so, so sad that there are these feelings of shame to this day that are associated with it, of the stigma that's still associated with it. And I do understand that the fear that people face, you know, they fear that by opening up to someone they will be judged or that person won't understand.
Yeah.
But I would say I do definitely think that culture is shifting. I've noticed that the people who dare to be the most vulnerable are actually the ones that are, you know, receiving the biggest amount of support and that are really reaping and benefiting from that, because all of a sudden people have come out and gone, oh my gosh, you know, I've had exactly the same thing happen to me. And being vulnerable can actually make you stronger. Because taking that leap of faith and daring to be who you are with flaws and all is, because we are all flawed, by the way, there is no such thing as perfection. And, you know, daring to put yourself in that situation where potentially someone may judge you, I think actually opens up this whole new world of where people suddenly go, oh my gosh, you know, I've had exactly the same experience, or yes, I thought I was going mad too, or, you know, I was having exactly these same fears and so on. And suddenly that bonds you.
And that, there's a really nice quote, which is, vulnerability is the cornerstone of confidence.
Yes, and it is.
And it's exactly that. And people are so scared to be vulnerable. And we're told not to be weak. And people think that being vulnerable is being weak.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's the opposite.
I think we're culturally conditioned to think like that, aren't we? That, you know, especially in our sort of British society, it's a strong, stiff upper lip, isn't it? That is changing now. But again, also, you know, having almost this very strong facade that you present to the world, and that, you know, it's all fine. How many times do you hear that? It's all fine.
Yeah.
And actually it's not. Then you're crumbling on the inside.
Yeah.
And I just think, and thank goodness this is changing. It's okay to admit that. And it's okay to say that your world feels like it's falling apart, and, you know, that you feel you're falling apart or going insane. And you know, I don't think there's a single human being, whatever that the reason may have been, that hasn't felt like that at one point or another in their life. So I think just being open about that and bringing it to the table, and, you know, owning who you are and what you are and being proud of that is really, really important. And seeing how other people relate to it. We bond over, at times of adversity is a need,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Right.
And I think it's what's really nice for me is that, you know, I think it is easy to forget that your fertility doctor is human.
Oh God, yeah, we've got a lot of flaws too.
But it's really, you know, we're all kind of in this together, really.
Yeah,
and actually, it's really,
we are.
You know, it's really amazing to kind of have these conversations, because I think, you know, a few years ago, when podcasts didn't exist and when social media didn't exist, these kind of conversations, these really relaxed conversations over a glass of wine between, you know, a previous patient and the doctor, just probably wouldn't have been shared or heard.
Yeah.
And so there's always been this patient-doctor dynamic, which can be quite tricky, and it can make patients feel like they can't ask for what they want, or they, you know, they just have to do what that the doctor's saying because they're the medical professional. And actually, it's much more important to have this fluid conversation.
Completely. And, you know, this is what your campaign's about, Alice, isn't it? It's about changing the language and the vocabulary that we use. And a lot of the vocabulary that currently exists draws this distinction between the doctor and the patient, because quite often, because the language is so medicalized, there's almost this dissociation from the emotional part of it and the effect that it has on someone like the patient. And some of that, I guess, is deliberate to, you know, almost help the medical professionals do the job that they need to do. But on the other hand, it's leaving, you know, permanent marks on people, and, you know, who are internalizing these words and, you know, identifying themselves with them. And that's completely wrong. And I think part of trying to break down this barrier between the doctor and the patient is also changing some of that vocabulary and making it more emotionally sensitive, because, you know, there's no doubt about it, you know, the classic thing you get taught as you go through training is don't get emotionally involved with you know, the patients that you're seeing. And of course, yes, there's an element of that, but you can't help but get emotionally involved with especially something like fertility, where you completely understand how much it means to people. And you're seeing all the raw emotion pour out in that consulting room. And again, you know, I go back to that fact that the enormous privilege and part of my job is that, you know, I get to see, along with my other colleagues, things that people would never normally see. You know, sometimes people haven't even opened up about this stuff to themselves, let alone anyone else. And you see this very, very real, raw emotion that comes out, and you can't help but want the absolute best for that person. And, you know, when they have their downs, you have your downs with them. When they have their ups, you know, it's incredible. Like today, you know, I had a patient who got pregnant through a treatment and it was just the most incredible feeling. And it really makes your day. I can't even put into words how that feels. It's an incredible bond. There are definitely things as medics that we see that move us, that are things that a lot of people won't necessarily see, but you really are at that cold face of life and death a lot of the time, and seeing that unfold, and you can't help but actually develop emotions around that. And
that's obviously, you know, you maintain your professionalism at all completely. Times, but you know, there's no need to be a robot.
Well, yes, and that's the thing, that the two can coexist. You can absolutely be a professional but also care very much about outcomes and how your patients are feeling. And I absolutely disagree that you need to dissociate the two. I don't think that's the case.
And it's going back really to that holistic approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and understanding that you're treating a human being and not just the parts.
Yes, not just really the physical parts, but there's all the emotional elements to it as well. And sometimes those can be even more important. You know, I remember working in geriatrics, which is older age medicine, and, you know, complete opposite end of the spectrum of what I've ended up in. But it taught me one very important thing. And that was that at the outset, being a very junior doctor going in, you're very gung-ho. You think you want to save everyone from everything. And actually, one of the things this taught me was that some of these patients just didn't want to be saved anymore, and they were ready to face death. They were ready to not have any further intervention. And that was a really, I mean, it's a tough thing to learn as a young medic, because your whole mentality is completely different to that, and you don't quite understand it. But I came to realize that for these people, you know, a gentle word, a hug, spending time talking to them about wartime stories and what they've been through meant more to them than actually doing open heart surgery, you know, and giving them a few extra years of life. And that for me was a really, really powerful lesson in how much empathy and how much caring about the emotional aspect of the patient means to people, you know. And it was very, very pronounced in that particular part of medicine, but I think it's also very pronounced in fertility too, which is so profoundly emotional. That you can't help but, you know, deal with emotions, and you have to almost get very good at doing that. I disagree anyone should ever get good to the point of where they almost ignore that or don't take it into account and develop, you know, a facade. I think that, as I say, that is changing. And I think that the patient-doctor relationship is changing as a result for the better. You know, and by also involving, when the patient sees that you're involved and invested in their care, you know, they're much more likely to also want to follow instruction. And when you can lead by example, authentic example, I think, again, it's the same thing.
If you form a relationship with your patient, your doctor, if you're the patient, and you trust them, and I always say to people, you need to really trust who's taking care of you, because that's a really important part of it. And, you know, I do remember one cycle where it was an NHS cycle, and, you know, I was told to give one dosage of whatever I was taking at that point. And I was questioning it, and it was the nurse giving me the dose over the phone. And I was questioning it because the previous cycle had to be abandoned because it had overstimulated me. And she just was like, well, this is what I've been told to tell you. So I was going, well, can I speak to the consultant, can I speak to somebody, because I really don't know what to do about this kind of thing. And there was this whole battle about it, and actually as much as I totally understand that, you know, we've moved on to a different subject here really, but that the NHS have got their boundaries, that doctor-patient relationship is actually crucial to somebody at that point, and to have that trust where you are about to inject hormones into you to try and make a person. And if you have any doubts or any questions over that, you need to be confident and empowered enough to be able to ask and at least have an explanation as to why you've been told to do that dose. And, you know, there should be lines of communication that are available to people who
Yeah, I think sometimes all people need is a bit of reassurance, right, over what they're doing and how they're doing it. And sometimes it's very simple measures, but, you know, we can easily forget them and their value and how much
and
they
that's
mean.
The thing, it probably, you know, if someone had just come on the phone to me at that point and gone, I completely understand, or even if the nurse had actually just said to me, I completely understand, this must be really difficult for you, all I can say, you know, just some way of communicating that was what I needed to do. But anyway, we're getting on to another topic, really.
I totally get what you're saying.
That
yeah.
trust thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to talk to you about your nature post that you did.
Yes.
So I love that picture. Thing, so yeah, Larissa posted this lovely picture of her just looking gorgeous as always.
A bit more glamorous than right now in the big glasses. My hair's straight back.
It's now 11.
Couple of braids in. Yeah.
Anyway, Larissa looking very glamorous, very beautiful in the woods, I think, or in the park.
In the forest.
In the
depths of the forest. I like to spend my time there.
At the weekend, just saying how much you love getting into nature. And tell me about that. Tell me
So this was the other, before we sort of veered off. I mean, I love how our conversation goes. This is what we do all the time.
We said we were going to have a 20-minute conversation.
I know, it's turned probably close to an hour now. So this is the other really important thing that I do to try and de-stress. And again, I'd really recommend to anyone. I just love the outdoors. I mean, I love nature generally. I'm such an outdoorsy person. And though I live in a big city like London, I do pine, you know, I'm a Yorkshire girl. I grew up in Yorkshire. And, you know, there's something about those rolling hills. Nature is absolutely amazing. There's something about, I love autumn. I mean, everyone loves summer. Yes, great. We all go swimming and it's wonderful and hot days. But there's something really, really special about autumn, because I think just seeing the change in season and seeing all these beautiful colours out in nature, it just makes you want to go outside, and especially when it's sunny. And I make a point of doing that every time I get any time off. And I used to do this wherever I've lived. I would go and drive to as remote a place as I could, or, you know, wherever I could. And I particularly love being, you know, surrounded by trees and a forest, and just going for a walk, going for a stroll, and just completely tuning myself out. And I think that's so important for a couple of reasons. One is that it's been shown to have a benefit in terms of reducing the amount of stress hormone cortisol in your body. So you naturally start to feel more relaxed and more at ease. But in addition to that, lots of studies have been done. This is what I posted about, in terms of the benefits of being outdoors to your immunity. So in terms of being able to fight an infection, in terms of reducing inflammation. So there's a lot of conditions, and especially in subfertility, so things like endometriosis, which are based around inflammation, where that can potentially also help. And you know, just improve in terms of improving your blood circulation, improving your vitamin D levels, improving your ability to focus and to concentrate, and your mental clarity. I mean, the list goes on and on. And yeah, but just the very act of being outside, of inhaling deeply, of stopping to notice nature and how amazing nature actually is. You know, that everything is set in this sort of, it just goes about its own business in this really calm, rhythmical way. I mean, you never see nature stressing, do you?
And it's really such a lovely way to connect back to the present, you know, if you're struggling
going
with
back to
your
our
anxiety, your stress, exactly. So I find it so helpful.
It's really calming. And if you've got a pet, if you've got a dog, as I used to have, now sadly my adopted dog is in a different country, but you know, there's nothing nicer than taking your pet for a walk and bonding with your pet during that time, or bonding with your loved one, going with a partner, you know, and just spending that quality time together.
Or friends, you know, I just love going for a walk with a friend. It's such a nice way of spending time together. Like, especially if you're going through a fertility thing and you're not drinking.
Yes.
Actually, it's a really nice way of going, do you want to go for a walk instead of, do you want to go to the pub?
And that's the thing. And it starts with so many conversations then as well. You start chatting, then you start doing fun things. I mean, I remember going with a friend and, you know, suddenly we found this Tarzan rope and trying to swing off it, you know. I'm not recommending you do that, people, by the way. But especially if you're you're trying to get pregnant. But you know, it's fun. It can be really, really fun and spontaneous. Mm. And
you make memories that you remember.
You do. And just seeing all of the colours, as Eki mentioned, there's something really calming. You know, there's a reason why a lot of people use the colour green as well and bring it indoors too. It's because it's a really, really calming and tranquil colour.
Yeah, and I think there's something about connecting with the seasons as well, which is really just really lovely and makes you feel, you know, I do have a little mourning period for the summer because I do love the summer.
But
you know, it's that embrace. It's embracing a new season and it's embracing autumn and all the benefits of autumn.
Oh, completely. And the lead up to Christmas and, you know, getting to wear a big cozy jumpers and then getting in front of a log fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, big socks on and spending time reading and being cozy at home. And it is about, you know, nurturing all of these really important elements within your spending time with yourself and with your loved ones. That's what the emphasis is on. And I think it sort of, again, brings it back towards centering and brings it back towards, you know, who am I? What do I like to do? How do I like to do it? And also valuing that time you get to spend doing that and not feeling guilty about it. Running a nice hot bath, you know, I think that's quite an autumnal thing to do. And, you know, all of it just ties in. It's about self-nurture and self-care, which is really, really important.
Absolutely. Just on the hot bath front. Now, just from to dive into a medical point of view, what... just remind me, when are you allowed to have a hot bath?
So generally fine, apart from we say in the 2 week wait. What you don't really want to be doing is having any big changes of temperature within that time period. Now, obviously, it's very difficult to prove this in any study, and you know, there's no sort of exact temperature that you should be trying to avoid. But we generally say avoiding anything that's too hot. So yes, that is a hot bath. Any hot water bottles, even laptops on your tummy, your mobile phones, you know, they can all transmit heat. In terms of exercise, it's a similar thing. You know, I will always say to patients, especially if you are an exerciser, it's very important to continue doing exercise, if for nothing else, but to keep you just mentally sane. However, you don't want to be doing anything too overexertional and raising your body temperature for too long and sustained a period of time, because again, we don't quite understand the side effects to it. But yeah, it's the 2 week wait. You know what? It's this magical thing that a lot of people ask me questions about. In fact, I will make a video on it because I think that it's a really, really important thing to cover for people, because you know, there's so many myths as well surrounding it too.
Yeah, just the clarity around it is really helpful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, cozy autumn time.
We love it.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Cozy.
Find yourself a nice forest as well.
Have a lovely forest. Go for a nice walk.
And you know, even if it is your local park or whatever, it's just, you know, a couple of minutes a day spent out in the sun has been shown... research has shown to have a benefit to your mental welfare and you know, also in terms of just getting some exercise, because that's the other important thing. It's the exercise element. So I know this is a bit of a toughie for people, in that, you know, we're all aware that we should be exercise at least a couple of times a week and remaining fit. And the thing is, you know, it's complicated for all sorts of reasons. I mean, first of all, so many of us are so busy now. You know, where do you find the time to do it? And then second of all, you know, if you are struggling to exercise because, you know, you're overweight or you're trying to lose weight, it can be really, really difficult to start initiating that and make that first move, because you get into this cycle of not feeling good about yourself. Let's say you're facing subfertility and already that's making you feel down. And then the fact that you're overweight makes you feel down. And then the fact that you don't feel so confident about yourself or feel so good, again, brings your whole energy level down. And it just becomes this very vicious circle of where you start to neglect your own needs and your own body. And, you know, that can be very, very detrimental to someone's psyche. So I think that the way... To look at exercise is it's a really, really important part of looking after your body and investing in yourself. not just if you're trying to get pregnant, but for the future as well. Okay, and you've got to make it fun. You've got to do something that will actually make you want to get out of bed and go and do it, that will give you that stimulation. So whether it is going for a walk, and that's one of the simplest things that you can actually do, going for a nice brisk walk. But you know, if it's taking a Zumba class, if it's going for a jog, you know, go and do it. And do it. It will feel like a chore at first if you're not used to it, but very soon it will start to become almost quite addictive in a sense. Because, you know, and you'll probably relate to that.
You do get the buzz. You get the endorphins. Yeah. And actually, you know, when I went through my transformative experience, when we were trying to conceive the first time, and I recognized that, you know, the exercise that I was doing was part of what was helping me to feel so good at such a difficult time, and I couldn't have not had that. And I know that, you know, again, getting onto another topic of how much exercise should you be doing, so I know that really gentle exercise, right? Like if you're in the middle of treatment.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, definitely. Look, being in the middle of treatment is a little bit separate because, of course, you're stimulating your ovaries, first of all, and they're getting swollen and bigger, and you want to be a bit careful about what you're doing, especially, you know, avoiding anything that's high impact, for sure. And then, of course, in the 2 week wait. But outside of that, and what I'm referring to is outside of that area, you know, to get yourself preconceptionally in the best frame and state that you can, I think is not just crucial in terms of giving you a better chance of success and improving your own health, but also very, very important for your emotional well-being. And the way, aside from selecting something that's enjoyable to you, I think you've also just got to set yourself realistic targets, something that's realistic for you. And what's realistic for you may not be for someone else, and that's okay, because we've all got different thresholds. But, you know, your idea of realistic might just be 10 minutes a day. And that's okay. That's absolutely better than nothing. And maybe start off with that. But then you'll gradually build up. And as, you know, we're saying here, that you do start to get that endorphin rush. And you do start to feel really positive about doing it, because you start to notice the difference it's making towards how you feel and how you look. And that in itself is something that becomes self-perpetuating. But yes, equally so, doing too much exercise, you know, where you're literally, you know, running for an hour or two every single day, you know, that is
a lot.
It's something that again can have a negative impact, especially on fertility as well, where it starts to upset the brain, the axis between the brain and the ovaries, and the hormones that are released. So, you know, you just have to, everything in moderation, and as I say, realistic for yourself. But never overdo it, because, you know, that in itself, as I say, can also have these negative consequences. And by the same token, in terms of exercise, also preparing food and watching what you eat. And, you know, autumn's a great time to cook, and, you know, preparing food, and, you know, whether it's, again, just for yourself or whether it's for a bigger group of people, it's just a really, I mean, you know, it's what we've been doing this evening. There's just something so lovely about the happiness that goes into preparing food and being mindful about what you're eating and how you're eating and how you're sharing it. And, you know, essentially understanding that what we eat is what we build our own bodies with. And,
absolutely,
you know, paying attention to that, not obsessively, but where you do, you enjoy what you eat, and you savor what you eat, and you, you know, genuinely enjoy chewing on the food and every mouthful and morsel that you take, as opposed to eating it quickly and being on the go with it. It is all about self-nurture
and nourishment.
Nourishment. Such a hearty word.
Yeah, so hearty. And I love learning. I learned a lot about nutrition, and I loved that actually nutrition was about adding more stuff into my diet rather than cutting loads out. And I did, you know, I did reduce processed sugar and all of the kind of stuff that they tell you to get rid of. I did at that point. Yeah. Not so great at the moment with my diet, have to admit.
So we all in a slide from time to time.
We go up and down, don't we?
But, we did, you know, say we had flaws, right? We are by no means perfect here, by the way, people.
No.
Were listening.
But there was a time for quite a sustained period of time where I was really into nutrition, and I noticed an amazing benefit to that, and I did love it. And I'm actually, you know, learning. I feel like every stage of life you go through, you have to work out how to fit things in. And at the moment, I still feel like I'm working out how to juggle motherhood. Food for me at the moment is something I want to get a handle on again, because that has definitely went off the boil the first year that my daughter was on the scene.
It's
the second year, and it's beginning to come back, but also we're trying to conceive again, and I know, you know, I'm aware that I need to enhance what I can, you know, as far as possible. But anyway, that's probably another conversation.
That is another conversation. So, you've got the fact that squash going anyway, which, by the way, is very, very good if you're trying to conceive. So yeah.
Same time next week then. Butternut squash soup, maybe?
Yeah, I think with some pine nuts on top. Yeah. Why don't we keep coming up with different versions of butternut squash and how many times you can reuse it?
You can spiralise it, can't you?
I love spaghetti. That. I've tried that. Yeah. Mm. With some salmon, it's actually really, really good. But this is the thing about food, you know, it's supposed to actually make you feel, this is the thing I think most people get wrong, that food is supposed to make you feel energised.
Yeah.
It's supposed to make you feel great. It's not supposed to make you feel drained and sluggish. Yeah. Which, let's face it, how many of us feel at the end of a big meal, right? Mm. And it's probably because we're not eating the right foods and we're not combining the right food groups either. And you know, that this is something that everything we've spoken about actually in this podcast, so that the whole lifestyle approach to it is something that I found so many people ask me about all of the time. And you know what? I decided the time had come to actually create and dedicate a whole website to it.
Yay!
So this is the thing I'm really, really excited about. And it's, you know, it's been an absolute labor of love. And I really, there's every single component to it that I hope I've covered in terms of, you know, nutrition and fitness, in terms of all of these different elements that you can bring in. And I genuinely use and give advice on things that I do, things that I prepare at home, exercises that I do that help me and that I think will definitely help other people out there in terms of trying to conceive. So it's, you know, it's, do go and check it out if you can. It's I don't even know my own website. No, it's really embarrassing.
Well, they can just find you on Instagram.
They can find me on Dr. Larissa Corder. And my website name is drlarissacorder.com.
There you go.
Nice and simple. Fantastic. Right? So I really, really hope people enjoy it. And, you know, it's all of this stuff that we discussed, but I also, if you've got feedback, if you want me to target and create any other things, any other videos, blog, please write in and tell me, because I love feedback. I love receiving comments and I want to create this for the people. I want to create this for you guys, you know, that's what it's all about. And
it's so exciting. And I can't wait to see it. I've heard so much about it.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait for you to see it.
It's really exciting. And I'm sure it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And Larissa's got some amazing plans and so knowledgeable. And yeah, just go and check it out.
But it's been such
a pleasure.
We could talk for England probably all night. The combination of us two. And can I say, I want to actually give thanks to you, Alice, and dedication to you, because this woman does incredible, incredible things, and she never gives herself any credit for what she does. And I have to say, you know, this has been, again, I talk about labours of love, but this has been your labour of love, this podcast and everything you're doing in Instagram. And I think you are phenomenal how you're using your own experience to help to motivate other people. And I truly, truly mean that, Alice. So, you know, she's getting all emotional on me now, but she didn't know I was going to say this either. But I really, really mean it. You are such an inspiration to so many people. And thank you so much for what you are doing and how you're wanting to change the world of fertility for others. So on behalf of myself and everyone else, because I know they feel it too.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you so, so much, everybody, for listening. It's an honour and a privilege to have this platform and to speak to people at Larissa.
I've loved it. Thank you so much for having me on. And I hope everyone enjoys it. And most importantly, goes and has lots of babies from it.
Yes. Exactly. Let's go and make babies.
Yes. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
I almost feel like I want to have a notebook and pen whenever I have a chat with Larissa, because she's got so much knowledge and imparts it so generously that I don't like to miss something if we're having a chat. So maybe I should have said that at the beginning of this episode. Anyway, loads of brilliant things coming from Larissa. Her website will be launched really soon. And if you're not following her, do go and find her on Instagram. And make sure you're following me too. This is Alice Rose, because I've got lots of really useful stuff coming up as well to really help you cope with the run up to Christmas and New Year, which can be a really hard time for anyone going through this infertility business. So do keep your eyes peeled for things that I've got planned. And thank you very much for being here with me. I really do appreciate it. If you have gained anything from this podcast, if you want to tell people about it, then please do. Any word that can be spread helps other people to find it and helps me to keep making this content for you. So please do go and rate and review on iTunes if that's where you get your podcasts. And if not, then drop me a line, send me a message, shout out on Instagram, just share away, because the more that I can tell people about this space, which is full of such useful content, if I may say so myself, there's loads of really great stuff. So I really hope that you have gained something from this, and I wish you all the love, and take very good care.